Okay, I think everybody's in the room now, so I might as well get started. Welcome to Becoming a Guru with Existing Features. My name is Peter Ritchie. I've got a consulting company up in Canada that I, creatively call Peter Ritchie Incorporated, and I do a lot of consulting in terms of Windows and C# and various things like that. Some of my information's there if you want to contact me. That's my email and my Twitter address if you like. I wrote a book a couple years ago called Refactoring with Visual Studio 2010. I'm told it's up in the book or in the bookstore upstairs or downstairs, I guess. Feel free to drop by and have a look at that. I've been working professionally in software for working on over 22 years now. So I've been around, seen a lot. And that's my blog address if you want to look at some of my stuff that I've blogged about. So in terms of this session, what we wanted to be able to do was sort of get into some of the features that we've gone through over the past few years with C# and VB, sort of get us into, sort of as we get into Windows 8 and .NET 4.5, we're looking at a lot of differences in what we used to be able to do before in terms of asynchronous stuff and things like that. And a lot of that stuff in terms of async, in terms of .NET 4.5 and Win8 and WinRT is all based on a lot of the things that have changed over the years, and they're kind of based on some advanced features. So this session is going to go through some of the changes that have occurred in the languages over the last 8 to 10 years. I'll start out pretty basic with C# 1 and .NET 1.1 in terms of a baseline, what we're going to look at in terms of what we used to have years ago, and potentially some people are still operating in that type of language. But then we'll move on to some of the things that we ended up getting in 2005 and then 2008, and then I'll sort of finish off with 2010. If I have some time, I'll show some of the things that we're progressing to in 2012. The basic theme of what we're going into in 4.5 and why we're doing this session is basically about asynchronous stuff. So what I'm going to do is show you a program that is basically does asynchronous HTTP requests, and I'll just evolve it over time, taking advantage of various different features that were added to the languages in each edition of the Visual Studio. And that's pretty much all of my slide deck. So I'm just going to spend the rest of my time navigating around in Visual Studio. So as I said, I have a little program here. It's not outstandingly useful, but it shows it's a good example of doing some asynchronous operations. I've got a Windows form here that I've got a button there. I go get HTML, and what I'm doing there is I'm actually downloading the entire web page, and in this case, it's the Microsoft homepage. And I'm going through that, and I'm parsing out all the script tags, and I'm displaying it in the list box here. It's not overly exciting, but it shows that we can do things in the background and not, sort of make our window look like it's hung. So let's have a look at some of the code we got with that. So this is what I've attempted to do. Obviously, I didn't write this in .NET 1.1 or in Visual Studio 2003. This is actually in 2010, but I've basically tried to do the same things that you would get if you tried to create an application in 2003. So I've got basically this one large file. We don't have partial classes yet. We've got our section that we used to get with the designer. It would try to hide it from us with a region and things like that. We got up here, we got a button handler. And what we do in there is we create a web request, and then we call the begin get response. Now, this is an asynchronous call, and what it does is goes off to the web page and asks to get the response for this particular URL. And then when it comes back, it calls our get response callback. That potentially will happen on another thread, or it may happen on an IO completion port, which basically leaves our UI thread to do whatever it needs to do and respond to messages and things like that. So in our get response, we actually go and get the request we had. Now, in terms of asynchronous methods, in terms of the begin-end pattern, we get passed in an async result class or object. And that gives us the information that we want. It's basically the state we want to deal with in that particular asynchronous operation. And when we started this, when I called begin response, I'm passing in the web request as my state. So I come back in here and I go get the state and I get that web request. I could have just left it as a member of the class. I chose to do it here, so I have a method that can operate all on its own without being, you know, dependent on anything in the class. From that, we call the getEndResponse, and that basically completes that particular operation. Then what we want to do is actually go and get the rest of the HTML for the page. So we call the getResponse stream to get the stream, and then we actually read everything in the stream. Now, when I started writing this application, I realized there wasn't anything that actually reads everything from a stream asynchronously. So what I had to do is create this little helper class with this method begin read stream to end, and that basically it kicks off another series of asynchronous actions where we call the begin read on the stream and then the end read. And down here we start off the read with the begin read, and then here we basically go in a loop until we keep getting data or get all the data. Because what happens with the stream and the HTTP is you get chunks of data back, so you have to continually ask for the rest of the data or more data until you basically got all the data. So we've got this fairly large class that does all that. We've got an onRead method. And in here, what we had to do was create our own asynchronous state class to keep track of the state. So I have a buffer that I want to fill up with the data, and I need to know where I am in that buffer, how much I need to, how much left I have to read, or I may have to make it bigger. I get little chunks of the data I copied in through the array, and I basically have an array that I'm using to store the data. And then when that's all done, we come back into the read to end callback, and that basically gives us all our data. And in this case, we get we do the begin end again, and then we get our data, and then we basically convert it to text and show it on the screen or in the list box. So one thing to note here is when we get the script tags, I call the setData method in here, and we go in here because setData is going to be called basically on a background thread from the begin invoke, or not the begin invoke, but the begin end pattern that we used to get our data. So what we need to do is we need to check that we're not on the GUI thread because we can't be changing anything on controls from any thread other than the GUI thread. So what we have to do is check invoke required, and if it's true, then we call begin invoke. And that basically marshals that call back into the GUI thread, so we don't have that particular exception. I could probably just comment this out and show what that exception would look like. Oh, okay, that didn't. Seems to work even without that, but normally you'd get an exception there, and you'd want to, you know, have to go through the invoke required and begin invoke to get that to work properly. And down here, I have a method that actually goes and gets all the script bodies, so it basically does a pattern match looking for scripts and basically makes a collection and sends it back. In this case, we're in .NET 1.1, so we don't have generics yet, so we're using an IEnumerable. And let's have a look at what we would have done in VBE in that case. So basically the same application. This one's in VBE, so we've got our click handler. We create a web request that we want to go and get our data. We call the begin get response, which we'll end up calling our get response callback. And then we do the same thing. We go get the response stream, and we read everything in that stream. And then when that's done, we make a call into our end callback, read to end callback. And in there, it's very similar to what we did in C#. Convert it to text, go and get all the scripts and set the data. And in the same way, we check the invoke required, to make sure that we actually call and begin invoke when it's necessary so we can marshal our call back to the GUI thread. And then we call the get script bodies and we add each item to our list box. And just as we did in C sharp, we also with the enable button we have to do the invoke required as well because we're changing some sort of control state on the button. So if we don't do that on the right thread, then we'll get an exception. And in much the same way as in C sharp, we've got to get script bodies and it goes through and gets those script tags and we add them to our return an enumerable again here. So if we go ahead and run that again, we'll just show that also works. Okay, same as our C sharp, we just go out and make a call. We have our responsive UI while we're actually doing something in the background. We get our scripts. Again, nothing exciting, but it shows an example of doing some asynchronous operations in existing versions of C Sharp and VB. So let's look at, as we move forward into .NET 2, let's have a look at what sort of features we ended up getting in there that kind of makes our life a little bit easier in terms of development and maintenance of our software and things like that. One thing to note here right away, we've already got partial methods. So we've split up our class into designer, what the designer wants to modify, and then basically our code. So as we had before, we had the form designer stuff was all in one file. So we didn't want partial class allow us to take that out and put it into a different file. So now we're not cluttered up in our file here with all this designer stuff. We can just work on our code. We've got our button click handler, et cetera, et cetera. And in this case, we're not much different than we were in C Sharp 1. One thing to note, though, I'm using an anonymous method here. So what this gives me, instead of having a specific method that all it would be used for, if we look back at the older version, this method here that we had in 1.1, or in C Sharp 1, its sole purpose was to respond to that callback. Nobody would actually call this in for any other reason. So we have this method sticking around, and it really doesn't need to be a method. What anonymous delegates or anonymous methods give us is we can actually wrap that up and put it into the actual call that we made into begin get response. So rather than having all these methods hanging around that all they do is satisfy a begin get response or satisfy some callback that we need, then we just work it into an anonymous method. In this case, basically all that method that I had before is right here in an anonymous delegate. And we'll see some of the ways that that's going to help us a lot as we move into 2012 as we go through some of these examples. And if we look at that running, it's basically the same code, but it's going to run just the same as we had before with the slight changes in terms of anonymous methods. So we call the get, and we go get our stuff, and it's just as we had before. Except now we have a few less methods in our class, or code seems a little bit more easy to maintain, a little bit tighter. I believe we have about, probably gained about 10 lines of code here in terms of less lines of code. So we're starting to see smaller code base, same value that we got out of it, does the same thing, but now we have a little bit less code to deal with. And we can look at the same thing in VB here. So the syntax for anonymous methods are slightly different. And actually, we don't get anonymous methods in this particular version of VB. We don't actually get that for a while. So what we actually get in .NET 2 in terms of VB is, in this example, all we're getting is partial classes. So we can look at that. We can see that we've got a designer class, and that's separate from our code class, and then we can work with those two things independently, and we get a little bit easier to maintain code that way. I should point out that if you have any questions, just feel free to hop up and go to the microphone and ask any question you like. So that's an example of the VB aspect of .NET 2.2 or .NET 2.0. And that there's a lot more that went into 2.0, and that was one example of 2.0. And in this example, I'll do a little bit more in terms of what you can do in 2.0. So if you look at this example here, same thing. I'm using anonymous methods here. In my get script bodies, I've slightly changed it. So now in this version of .NET, we actually have generics. So rather than sending back just an IEnumerable, I'm going to send back an IEnumerable of strings. This makes it a little bit cleaner or a little bit more clear what we're actually trying to do here in terms of the get script bodies is actually returning a collection of strings. Makes it a little bit more type safe depending on what we want to do. In our case, we're not actually doing anything with strings. We actually just add it to the list box items, and that basically just takes a series of objects. So in this case, it doesn't matter that we're using strings, but it's our intention of what we're trying to do with what we're returning back from getStringBodies is a little bit more clear now. One thing to note here as well, I've converted this getStringBodies into an iterator method. You'll see here with the yield return and the yield break, what it's doing is actually, in the background, this is actually creating a state machine by the compiler, and it's generating basically an interface that goes back and implements the IEnumerable, but it's not doing it all in one collection. So rather than sending back this huge collection of strings, we're sending back one string at a time. This is interesting if we start looking at large HTML pages where we don't have to build up a collection and then send it back from getScriptBodies. We can send it back basically one at a time. So the most we're going to store is one string instead of a collection of strings. And depending on the other end of the getScriptBodies who's using this IEnumerable, it might actually just only use one thing at a time. It could actually, you know, bring everything back and, of course, bring everything into memory. But this actually allows us to use a collection of things without having the entire collection in memory. All right, let's run that. We'll see that it's basically the same as what we've seen so far. So same as we had before, basically a window with our list box, and we go get our stuff, and we can modify our window and do things for the window while we go off and get our data in the background. Let's have a look at some of the things we got in VB in that respect as well. So much in the same that we had with the C# code, I've modified the get script bodies that we have here to return an IEnumerable of string as well. So we've added generics in this particular example. One thing to note, though, that we didn't get iterator methods in VB in that release of Visual Studio. We're not actually going to get those until Visual Studio 2010 for any of the VB folks out there. Let's have a look at some of the other features we get. Now we're starting to look at C# 3 and .NET 3 in this example here. One thing we've started with in terms of this example is we introduced anonymous types or implicitly typed types. So we use the keyword var for that. Now this is actually strongly typed, so this is actually an HTTP web request, not simply an object. We could change that back to, that's effectively what we're getting by this declaration, but we can now use var, so we don't need to actually have to, type a lot of type names in if we don't feel we need to. In this case, we're casting to something specific, so there's no confusion that we're going to get out of this. Now, if you look down here in the get script bodies, one thing that we have here is I've explicitly defined what matches here. If we actually change that to a var, we'll quickly notice that that's going to give us an error because matches is actually an object collection. or a match collection. So it doesn't know what each item is in the collection. It's basically this match collection type. So when I actually use var here, the only thing it knows about this match is that it's an object. For example, if I specify the type explicitly, that's actually what the var would do for me, but that's not what I want to be able to use here. I want to be able to access the groups method on that particular object. So I actually have to explicitly tell it what type it is. So it's important to know that you can use implicitly typed variables with var, but sometimes you're going to have to, you know, watch out and not, you know, get caught by some of the implicitly types that it chooses for you. Another interesting thing to look at in terms of implicit types is there's certain casting rules in C# that sort of sometimes get people by surprise. And in this example, I've got two types, one unsigned integer and one signed integer, and then I'm multiplying the two into an implicitly typed variable here. Now, when you use var, it's gonna basically take the type of the result. And in this case, what happens in C# is when you multiply an unsigned integer to an integer, the result is actually a long. So looking at this code, you might expect that that var is actually going to be some type of integer, either uint or a signed int. And what's actually happening here is it's generating a long. So var is useful in terms of some of the things you want to be able to use with it, but it's one of those things you sort of have to be careful about in terms of how you're using it. Now, one place where you actually have to use it is in terms of anonymous types. So in this example here, I'm creating a type, and I'm defining two properties, x and y, and assigning them a value. And this is creating an anonymous type here. I don't actually use anything in terms of the anonymous types in this particular example, but that's an example of how you'd create an anonymous type. One thing I've introduced in this code that we got in this particular version of .NET was we have lambdas. They're a specific type of anonymous methods that have a slightly different syntax to them. In this case, we have a parameter that we define in our method. Then we use the arrow operator to define a lambda. And this is a statement lambda. So it's got multiple statements in it. Wrapped with the curly brackets, which is slightly different than what we had with the anonymous methods from the previous version, where we say that this is a delegate, we give it a body, and we define a parameter that it takes into our particular anonymous method. So slightly different, a little bit less wordy, kind of got a little bit less code with that. We've got another example of anonymous or a delegate down here, or a lambda. And this one is not a statement lambda, so it's not wrapping up curly brackets, and we're not actually using a semicolon here. We could actually convert that to a statement lambda simply by doing this. In this case, it's not something we want to do because it's a little bit more verbose, so we're just going to use the expression lambda like that once we get rid of the semicolon. So it's a little bit less wordy. If you wanted to do anonymous method, you'd end up having to put a delegate in, the keyword delegate in there. So it's a little bit less wordy for using lambdas. And we'll see some of the things you can actually get out of lambdas in a little bit, but this actually helps us write a little bit cleaner code, I think. One of the other things we got in this particular version of the language was extension methods. So if we go back and look at, I'll do the C# version first. If you go back and look at this stream helper that I ended up having to create, we have this method that we take and it passes in a stream and we operate on that stream. Now obviously we can add that method to the stream class. But now with this version of C#, we can actually write extension methods to make it look like we're actually adding methods to a particular class. Let's have a look at the extension methods here. So I've changed it slightly so we're not actually using the word stream in the name. So in what I had before we had extension methods, was I called it begin read stream to end, because we'd have to use it in a specific way. Now let's go have a look at some of the usages here. So we called stream helper dot begin stream read to end. And that fairly common way of calling a static method, but it's kind of wordy. With extensions methods, we can actually do it slightly differently. So it makes it look like we're actually operating on the stream object. This makes our code a little bit more clear, a little bit easier to read, and I think it, makes it a little bit less wordy in terms of our code. So we've started to see that we're getting a lot less code now for all the same value that we had before. And in this particular syntax, we have to use the this keyword to say this is an extension method, and this is the stream object that it's going to operate on. And then we do the same with the other. We do the end, read to end, and everything that's private in here is all the same that we had before. Now let's have a look at what we get out of VB from that as well. So in here we also have anonymous types or implicitly typed variables as well. In this case, I'm saying dimension or match or a match collection, and I'm not actually giving it a type. Previously, we would have had to have done dim matches as match collection, and that would actually tell it what type it was. In this case, we don't need to do that. We can get the implicit type from the matches method, and it has a particular return type that we end up using for the type in terms of very similar to the var in C#. And we also have extension methods in that version of Visual Basic as well. So I've gone ahead and I've created the same thing. Now the syntax for extension methods in Visual Basic is slightly different than C#. Obviously, you've got your basic VB syntax inferences, but in terms of VB, you actually have to create extension methods in a module rather than in a class that you would in C#. So it's a little bit different there, but basically, it goes with the extension attribute as opposed to the this keyword that we had in C#, because obviously there is no this keyword in Visual Basic, so it doesn't make any sense. You can actually do the same thing in C# and use the extension attributes, but it's a lot cleaner if you use the this attribute or the this keyword. So, is there any questions so far? Everything's clear so far? I'll go on to some more examples of some of the things we got in the next version of .NET. So one thing we get, one of the reasons we got things like anonymous methods, extension methods, and things like that was to sort of support the link syntax. And .NET 3 gave us the ability to basically do language queries inside our code. And here's an example of some link statement here. So as opposed to what we had done before, we basically had a for loop in our get script bodies. So in this case, we basically did a for each loop and we iterated through all the script bodies. In this one, we're actually doing it slightly differently, where we're saying, give me all the matches in terms of a link statement. So from all the matches, or from each match in matches, select a particular value from the group. Just a simple example of doing link in terms of, in this case, it's linked objects, but you can also do things like link to entities in terms of the entity framework, or link to SQL if you're using some of the other versions of Visual Studio, like 2005 and 2008. And again, in this case, we're using an iterator method, so we're yield returning the script body. So as we go through each member of this particular collection, we're sending back the data and we're not actually building up an entire collection of objects and sending it back. So now we're starting to look at a lot less code. I think when we started out, we had about 300 lines of code in terms of what we could do in VB1 and C-sharp 1. Now we're starting to look at, I think we're looking at probably in this particular example of code, we're probably looking at about 20% less code, just simply by having some of these new language features and things like that. And let's have a look at the same example of this in VB. So just as we had in C#, we actually have link in VB as well. So let's just show an example of that, which is not in this file. Should be in here. There we go. So we got the link statement here. So we have from match has match and matches, and then we select a particular item in the group, or actually it's a value from the group, which is about the same as what you get in Visual Studio, or what you get in C#. Of course, you get a different, casing and things like that, but it's basically the same. You've got, for something in some collection, select something from that. In this case, we're dealing with a projection. So we're taking, using the select keyword and coming back with some different value that we got from the collection. In this case, we're actually getting the one value property from the particular entry in that collection. As we see, it's about the same as what we had in C#. So in .NET 4, we kind of got into get a little bit more into asynchronous support in a little bit in terms of what we have in what we had with the task parallel library. And when I've changed this slightly in terms of how I'm getting my data, I'm actually using a task basing. Previously, I was using the begin and end and using simply callbacks. I'll just do a comparison here. What we had done before is we'd call the begin get response, begin read to end, and I'd simply chain all those together through a series of asynchronous operations. Now what we have in .NET 4 is we actually have the task parallel library, where we can actually we have first class citizens that are actually asynchronous tasks, and we can actually manage them slightly differently than we had before. What I had to do before was chain things together, and I had to call us this particular method setData, and I had to check if invoke was required and then call begin invoke if that was the case that we were being called on a background thread. Now what we get with the task parallel library is that there's a recognition that things are happening on background threads and there's UI threads and things like that in terms of the way we're going to manage our code that we want to run asynchronously. So in this case, I'm creating a task based on the begin-end pattern. This is wrapping up a call to begin, read to end, and a call to end, read to end in a task object. And then I can manage that task as one entity rather than, a call to begin and a call to end. And in this case, I'm going to spawn off that task, and it's going to manage the calls to begin and end for me. But I'm also going to say, okay, when that's done, I want to continue with something else. And in this case, this is a continuation. And I'm explicitly saying that I want that particular task to be run on the UI thread. And what that does for me is I can simply call setData now without, as we can see here, it's slightly different than what we had before, is we don't have to do the invoke required and the begin invoke, because over here we know explicitly that we're using the UI thread. In this case, we're basically asking the task scheduler to give us the current synchronization context. And in this context, we're actually running on a WinForms thread, so it would go and get that context and figure out how it needs to invoke that particular method or this particular anonymous method here, how it should be invoked and what thread it should be invoked and things like that. And what's interesting with this is we could actually take this code here, and what we had before, this is specifically using invoke required and begin invoke, and that's specifically for WinForms. So all this code is only ever going to work on WinForms because it's the only thing that uses invoke required and begin invoke. With this code that we have here, it's a little bit more anonymous in terms of what it's dealing with. So if we were actually running this in a Windows or a WPF context, it would know it's in that context and know how to invoke the continuation in that context, and we don't have to deal with it here. So we could actually take this code verbatim. Of course, we actually have a different set of controls and a different framework underneath us, but this code could be run both WinForms and WPF because we've abstracted away the fact that there's different types of GUI threads and different types of frameworks for our presentation. And in this case, I've actually, what I had before was an enable button function that would wrap up the fact that we had to deal with an invoke required and begin invoke. Now with using the task and the continuations, I don't have to deal with that anymore. I can just simply call the enable because I know this block of code is going to be running in the right context. I've got that much less code I have to deal with. I don't have all these invoke requireds all over the place, and I don't have to call in begin invoke and things like that. So let's have a look at this running as well, just so we can see that it's doing the same thing that we had before. So we've got quite a bit of difference in code now in terms of what we start out with. So we, you know, call the get click button, and we can actually have an updated UI, and it does all the same things that we had before. But now I'm kind of looking at sort of drastically different code at this point. We've got tasks now, we're using continuations, but as we see, it operates in all the same way we had before. And let's have a look at roughly the same thing in Visual Basic. So same as we had before, some tasks in here, wrong version. Yeah, so here we are. Same as we had in C Sharp, we're calling the begin get response, and we're also creating a task here as well, wrapping it up with the helper method from async. That basically tells us that we want to wrap up a call to begin, some begin method and some end method, because we're using the begin end pattern for our asynchronous operations. That wraps it up into a task, and we get our GUI thread here as well. Much the same way we did in C Sharp, only in the VB syntax. And then we do the same thing with continue with, and we call our continuation. And we do the same thing, and we have the same lack of restrictions. We can actually call whatever we want on the controls, because what we're actually invoking here in this anonymous method is something that's always going to be executing on the GUI thread, so we don't have to deal with the same thing we had before, invoke required and begin invoke. And as we can see down here in set data, we don't have the invoke required anymore, and we're not using the enable button method that we had before. Just do a comparison to what we had before. Oops. So what we had before in the set data, we had to call the invoke required and then the begin invoke if we needed to do that. As well, we had the enable button method that we had to call because we had to check the whether or not we're on the GUI thread and things like that. So I find that using the task in this way, it makes it a little bit easier to deal with having to think about things. Obviously, we're not dealing with things that are specific to WinForms, but we're also not having to deal with all these extra methods and all these different things that we need to test and things like that. We just say, okay, I want this continuation be running on a particular thread, and it goes and marshals it back to the UI thread, in this case the WinForms thread, and then we don't have to deal with the exceptions that we would have gotten had we not called that. So let's, I've got a bit of time here, so let's have a look at some of the code that we actually get out of Visual Studio 2012. So with .NET 4.5, they introduced the concept of asynchronous operations right into the language, rather than what we had before in terms of, you know, had to use a begin-to-end pattern or things like that. We do our operations and things with callbacks, and it would call back into us. What we get in 2012 is something that's slightly different, but we actually have all our code in one place. So in this case, I'm saying this is an asynchronous method because it's going to be doing something asynchronous. And I'm going to use the await keyword to say, I want to call this read async, and I want to call it asynchronously. Now, what they've done in terms of the API is they've added a lot of methods. If we look back at what we had before, we were calling things that had a begin and an end, and we'd pass it in a callback, and that was the way we were doing asynchronous operations up until .NET 4.5. So it's slightly different now in terms of all those begin and end methods now have a single method that has been added on, basically a partner method that says, I want to do an asynchronous operation. In this case, this is the equivalent of wrapping up begin and end in one method, and they call all of those, they end all those with the word async. So if you're used to using things like begin read or end read, then you'd have a matching method called read async, and you'd use that in terms of what we want to do in .NET 4.5 with our asynchronous operations. In this case, we use the await to signify that we actually want to run everything after the await keyword effectively asynchronously or in the background. So what's happening here is, although it looks like we have linear code that we're just going to run line by line, what actually happens here is this is going to be run in a background thread, and this will be executed after the results come back. So this is the equivalent of us having to, you know, generate a delegate. What the compiler does is say this is actually the delegate that it will be the callback when it's done calling the read async method. So if we compare that to what we had before, in this case we're using the begin get response, but we, in this case, had to generate or had to write our own delegate, and we're telling it specifically that this is a delegate, in this case a Lambda expression. And we have to do all that explicitly. So we're chaining all these things together through begin and ends. In this case, we're using tasks as well and continuations like that. But with the new syntax, that actually happens all under the covers for us. So what's happening in this particular method is it's generating a state machine and trying to figure out where things are going to be called, when they're going to be called. In this case, we're going to call read async, and it's going to happen asynchronously. It's obviously got some result that it sends back. But everything after the await is basically generated as a continuation or, in this case, a delegate or anonymous method. The compiler takes all that code that I have selected and says, okay, well, that's actually going to be in another method in some compiler-generated class that's going to be called into when the read async is done. So one thing to note here as well, I'm simply going through and looping through the results right in line here. So I don't have to actually use that class that I had before, the helper class, or the extension class, depending on what version of .NET we're using at the time. So I don't need to do these stream extension classes anymore because everything's in line in my code, so it looks more like a simple loop, and all the compiler will deal with all that information for us. So in this case, I'm basically looping while I have all my bytes. I can do a loop in this way rather than having to, you know, create a helper class that keeps track of my state as well as, you know, knows how to call begin read and end read and continue doing that in a loop. We just simply do it in a loop here, and I don't need to deal with that very large extension method or those very large helper classes. So yeah, let's see how this runs in here as well. So same basic UI. We call it get.html. We have a responsive UI while get it. So it's all the same thing. And now we're looking at, I think when we started out, we were probably looking at 300, 350 lines of code. Right now, we're probably getting it down to, if you look at the bottom of this method, we're probably down to about 60 lines of code now as opposed to 300. So we're starting to see that the async and await extensions or the new language features are going to allow us to have a lot less code, which means a lot less maintenance of code, and just makes it generally easier to deal with things. And you know, in this case, it's much easier to deal with, you know, one method that's doing all our things, and it's a basically linear set of code. We have one method that's doing all our asynchronous operations, but we're dealing with all that code in one place as opposed to what we had before where we had to, you know, have different basically chain together a bunch of callbacks. In this case, we started using anonymous methods, so it's all in one place, but the async await makes it a little bit cleaner and we don't have to deal with concepts of callbacks and things like that. So let's look at the same thing in Visual Basic as well. Those are much the same that we had in C#. We have the concept of asynchronous methods. In this case, we need to say, because we want to call await on one of our methods in here, we have to say that this method is async. So we decorate it with the keyword async, and then we use the await in much the same way we did before. We get the response, and as we saw before, the same way we had the begin get response and end get response, we have the get response async, which takes the place of those two methods that are still in the framework. But in this case, we want to use it with the await. So get things like begin read or get read async and get response async return a class or a task. There it is. So it returns a task. So we're getting back into some of the things we had in .NET 4 in terms of we're utilizing the task parallel library in the same way that we would before, but now it's all happening implicitly for us. In this case, we're going to, the await keyword goes and knows there's a task, and it's going to manage the continuation for us in that case. And much the same way in C#, everything that follows an await is basically the continuation that was passed on to the continue with. And if we look back at what we had before, this is basically the line that occurs after the begin read. And we don't actually have begin read in this example because I don't have to deal with the helper method that I had to create. But we have a loop here, and that's the continuation after the get response async. So in this case, we call the get response async. The compiler is generated where all that selected code is. It's generated a method out of that or anonymous method out of that, and it's going to call that when the await's completed. And then we don't have to deal with our asynchronous state, and we don't have to deal with managing all those different types of things. It's going to do all that for us. And let's just have a look at that running as well. So same as we had in the C#, we can press the button and we get a responsive UI while it's off doing all those things in the background, and we get our results and show them in our list box. Oh, well, I seem to ended a little bit early, but that's about it for this particular session. Is there any questions that anybody has? Yes.
Can you pass BIREF variables into functions that you call with the await keyword?
Can you repeat the first part?
Can you pass BIREF variables into a function that you call with the await keyword?
I don't think you can, because it's not going to know where the result's going to come back.
Okay. Question about anonymous or extension methods. Mm-hmm. Can you call them if the object is nothing?
Pardon me?
If the object is nothing, can you call?
No, you can't. You can. If it's nothing, you can, yes. You have to make sure, obviously, if in that extension method you're doing something with the object that was passed in, you have to check for null.
Check for
like, for example, you could cast nothing as a stream and then use that stream extension method that I had, and you could actually call it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks.
I got a question.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yes, thank you. What keyboard shortcut were you using when you make all the code windows pop up there? Is that
which code windows?
It looked like you were doing like an Alt-Tab, like inside of Visual Studio. You would pop up and it would make a square come up in the middle of the screen where you're navigating between all your open code panes.
You mean like going back and forth like that, or
no?
Oops, more like that.
Wait, do that one again. That one. What is
That's Control Tab.
Control Tab.
Yeah, that's a reasonably common Windows thing where you want to tab between different windows within an application.
Okay.
As a case for tabbing between the two tabs.
Yeah.
So I'm going between those two tabs in that particular place.
Control Tab.
Yeah.
I've got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Did you show the VB equivalent of the yield break and yield return? I think I
believe it was there, yes. Let me have a look at that.
Maybe I just missed it.
Should be here, I think. Oh, it's actually in the 2012. That's when 2012, the next release, we're not getting yield returns or the iterator methods in VB until 2012. Probably just missed that. See, there we go. Basically, it's very similar to what we had in C#. It's you basically yield return something, much the same way we had in C#. So now you can have iterator methods. The syntax is slightly different in VB, where you actually have to, decorate your method or decorate your function as an iterator. I'm not clear why they did that in difference to C#, because you've got a yield keyword that should tell you that it is an iterator method anyways, but in this case, the syntax is slightly different, and you have to use the iterator keyword or the iterator decorator to say this is an iterator method, and then you can. And if I took that off, you'd see that the yield would be an error. So you can't call yield without an iterator method. But it's very similar to what we get with async and wait. If we did in here when we were using the await keyword here, if I took the async off, the async decoration, it would say, these are errors because you're not in an asynchronous method. So very similar to that. So maybe in that case, it's more consistent, which might be why they had done that in VB. But I'm not really sure why there's the difference there.
Got a question over here to your right.
Yes.
Are the async built-in calls the only ones you can use with the await? Or can you make your own?
You can. I don't have an example of it, but you can do all those things. You basically return a task object. Anything that returns a task can be used with the await keyword. Any other questions? Yes.
By any chance, there's
even source code
for this available?
Sure. The question was, will the source code be available? Yes. I think there's a link in the tech ed site to get at extra content, and it should be in there. If not, I'll check and make sure it's there by the end of the day. If you don't see it, just send me an email. I'll just go back to 7. That's all my contact information. If you have any other questions or for some reason you can't get the source code, I can send it to you from there. So if there's no other questions, I'll be available in the TLC section down in the main area downstairs. Basically, that area is right by the Porsche. So if you want to go there by sometime in the afternoon tomorrow, I'll be there if you have any other questions.